The first opinion given to me regarding Jacob Settle was a simple descriptive statement. He's a down-in-the-mouth chap. But I found that it embodied the thoughts and ideas of all his fellow workmen. As I saw more of the place and the workmen, I came to have a special interest in him. He led a very solitary life, keeping house by himself in a tiny cottage far on the edge of the moorland. In time, Jacob Settle and I became quite friends. Once or twice as I crossed the moorland on Sundays, I looked in on him. He would never, under any circumstances, come into my own lodgings. One Sunday afternoon, I was coming back from a long walk beyond the moor, and as I passed Settle's cottage, stopped at the door to say how do you do to him. To my surprise, I heard a feeble voice from within. I entered at once and found Jacob lying half-dressed upon his bed. He was as pale as death, and the sweat was simply rolling off his face. His hands were unconsciously gripping the bedclothes as a drowning man holds on to whatever he may grasp. I sat down beside him and asked after his health. For a while he would not answer me, except to say that he was not ill. But then he half arose on his elbow and said, "I thank you kindly, sir, but I'm simply telling you the truth. I am suffering from a bad dream." "A bad dream," I said. "But dreams pass away with a light, even with waking." "No, no, that's all well for people that live in comfort, and with those they love around them. 2 nights past have I dreamed it. It was hard enough the first night, but I came through it. Last night I stayed awake till just before the dawn, and then it came again. And ever since I have been in such an agony, as I am sure the dying feel, and with it all the dread of tonight." I tried to cheer him. "Try and get to sleep early tonight. The sleep will refresh you, and I promise you there will not be any bad dreams after tonight." He shook his head hopelessly, so I sat a little longer and then left him. When I got home, I made my arrangements for the night, for I had made up my mind to share Jacob Settle's lonely vigil in his cottage on the moor. Just as the bells of the city were striking 11, I stood opposite his door armed with a bag in which were my supper, an extra large flask, a couple of candles, and a book. I opened the door softly and entered without waking Jacob, who lay asleep with his white face upward. He was still and again bathed in sweat. I waited for the awakening. It came suddenly, and in a fashion which touched me to the quick, for the hollow groan that broke from the man's white lips as he half arose and sank back was manifestly the realization of some train of thought which had gone before. "If this be dreaming," said I to myself, "then it must be based on some very terrible reality." At that moment he realized that I was with him. With a positive cry of joy, he seized my hand and held it in his 2 wet, trembling hands, as a frightened child clings on to someone whom it loves. "There, there, it's all right. I have come to stay with you tonight, and together we will try to fight this evil dream."
"Fight it? Oh, no, sir, no. For it comes from God and is burned in here."
And he beat upon his forehead.
"What is the dream?" I asked. "No, I had better not tell it. It may not come again."
"But if it should come again, you will tell me, will you not?"
"If it comes again, I shall tell you all."
Then I tried to get his mind away to more mundane things, so I produced supper and made him share it with me, including the contents of the flask. Little by little, the comfort of his body stole over his mind, and I could see sleep laying her gentle hands on his eyelids. By degrees, I got interested in my book. So interested that presently I was startled by its dropping out of my hands. I looked and saw that Jacob was still asleep, and I was rejoiced to see that there was on his face a look of unwanted happiness. Then I turned to my work again, and again woke, but this time to feel chilled to my very marrow by hearing the voice from the bed beside me.
"Not with those red hands?
On looking at him, I found that he was still asleep. He woke, however, in an instant.
Settle, tell me your dream. While we both live, I shall never mention what you may choose to tell me.
But I had better tell you first what goes before the dream. I was a schoolmaster when I was a very young man. It was only a parish school in a little village in the West Country. I was engaged to be married to a young girl whom I loved and almost reverenced. It was the old story. While we were waiting for the time when we could afford to set up house together, another man came along. He was handsome and a gentleman, with all a gentleman's attractive ways for a woman of our class. He would go fishing, and she would meet him while I was at my work in school. I reasoned with her and implored her to give him up, but she would not listen to anything I could say. Then I took it upon myself to meet the man in a lonely spot. I implored him to deal well with the girl, for what might be only a pastime of an idle hour with him might be the breaking of her heart. But when I asked him when he intended to marry her, his laughter galled me so that I lost my temper and told him that I would not stand by and see her life made unhappy. Then he grew angry too, and in his anger said such cruel things of her that then and there I swore he should not live to do her harm. God knows how it came about, but I found myself standing over his dead body with my hands crimson with the blood that welled from his torn throat. No one suspected his absence except my poor Mabel, and she dared not speak. But it was all in vain, for when I came back again after an absence of months, for I could not live in the place, I learned that her shame had come, and that she had died in it. Hitherto, I had been borne up by the thought that my ill deed had saved her future, but now, when I learned that I had been too late, and that my poor love was smirched with that man's sin, I fled away, with the sense of my useless guilt upon me more heavily than I could bear. Ah, sir, you that have not done such a sin don't know what it is to carry it with you. Ordinary men, to whom all things are possible, don't often, if ever, think of heaven. It is a name and nothing more. But to those who are doomed to be shut out forever, you cannot think what it means. And this brings me to my dream. It seemed that the portal was before me, with great gates of massive steel rising to the very clouds. My heart and my soul were so full of rapture and longing that I forgot. And there stood two mighty angels with sweeping wings and stern of countenance. They held each in one hand a flaming sword, and in the other the latchet. Nearer were figures all draped in black, and they handed to each who came white garments such as the angels wear. I was eager to don my own garment, and hurriedly threw it over me, and stepped swiftly to the gate. But it moved not, and the angels pointed to my dress. I looked down, and was aghast, for the whole robe was smeared with blood. My hands were red. They glittered with the blood that dripped from them as on that day by the river bank. And then the angels raised their flaming swords to smite me down, and the horror was complete. I awoke. Again and again and again that awful dream comes to me. Never, never shall I be able to pass the gate, for the soil on the angel garments must ever come from these bloody hands. You need not despair, Jacob Settle. God is good, and his mercy is great. Live on and work on in the hope that some day you may feel that you have atoned for the past. I shall watch with you here, and we shall have no more evil dreams tonight. He made an effort to pull himself together and answered,
I don't know how to thank you for your goodness to me this night. But I think you had best leave me now. I feel a weight off my mind since I have told you all.
I'll go tonight, as you wish it, I said.
But take my advice, and do not live in such a solitary way. Heart, man, heart. There is work in the world for you to do, Jacob Settle. You can wear those white robes yet, and pass through that gate of steel.
Then I left him. A week after, I found his cottage deserted, and on asking at the works, was told that he had gone north. No one exactly knew whither. 2 years afterwards, I was staying for a few days with my friend Dr. Munro in Glasgow. He was a busy man and could not spare much time for going about with me, so I spent my days in excursions to the Trossachs and Loch Katrine and down the Clyde. On the second last evening of my stay, I came back somewhat later than I had arranged, but found that my host was late too. The maid told me that he had been sent for to the hospital, a case of accident at the gasworks, and the dinner was postponed an hour. I found him washing his hands, preparatory to starting for home. Casually, I asked him what his case was.
"Oh, the usual thing. A rotten rope and men's lives of no account. Two men were working in a gasometer when the rope that held their scaffolding broke. There was about 7 feet of water in the gasometer, so they had a hard fight for it, poor fellows. However, one of them was alive, just alive, but we have had a hard job to plumb through. It seems that he owes his life to his mate, for I have never heard of greater heroism. They swam together while their strength lasted, but at the end they were so done up that even the men slung with ropes coming down to help them could not keep them up. But one of them stood on the bottom and held his comrade up over his head, and those few breaths made all the difference between life and death. They were a shocking sight when they were taken out, for that water is like a purple dye with gas and the tar. The man upstairs looked as if he had been washed in blood. Ugh.
And the other?
Ah, he's worse still. That struggle under the water must have been fearful. One can see that by the way the blood has been drawn from the extremities. Resolution like this could, you would think, do anything in the world. It might almost unbar the gates of heaven. Look here, old man, it is not a very pleasant sight, especially just before dinner, but you are a writer, and this is an odd case.
While he was speaking, he had brought me into the mortuary of the hospital. On the bier lay a body covered with a white sheet, which was wrapped close round it.
Looks like a chrysalis, doesn't it? I say, Jack, if there be anything in the old myth that a soul is typified by a butterfly, well, then the one that this chrysalis sent forth was a very noble specimen, and took all the sunlight on its wings. See here.
He uncovered the face. Horrible indeed it looked, as though stained with blood. But I knew him at once. Jacob Settle.
My friend pulled the winding sheet further down.
The hands were crossed on the purple breast, as they had been reverently placed by some tender-hearted person. As I saw them, my heart throbbed with a great exultation, for the memory of his harrowing dream rushed across my mind. There was no stain now on those poor, brave hands, for they were blanched, white as snow. And somehow, as I looked, I felt that the evil dream was all over. That noble soul had won a way through the gate at last. The white robe had now no stain from the hands that had put it on.